A Freilichen Purim. We're here. Yeah. I told you that we weren't going to miss class because of Purim. I hope everybody had a wonderful Kriyas HaMegillah. And in accordance with the Baal Shem Tov's teaching, I hope that everybody made sure not to read the Megillah L'Mafreya, meaning to say, to internalize the story of Megillah as something that is happening very much now in the present and in all of our lives. Okay, so tonight's letter is not overtly about Purim. It's not even from that time of year. We're still at the beginning of Tavshin Yud Tes. We're still in the month of Tishrei. But I do want to mention something that is connected to this time of year, and that is that last night, if you remember, letter number two, the Rebbe's answer to a young educator in the Holy Land, to Rabbi Yosef Marton. So I mentioned when I was giving background for that letter, when I was explaining the Uferatzda era and the Reshet, the network of Chabad schools in the Holy Land, I mentioned the Yechidus of Reb Itchke Gansberg, Olav HaShalom, where the Rebbe spoke to Reb Itchke about the importance of that work. I did not know it at the time. I didn't know it. Maybe my mazel knew it. But last night and today, Tainis Esther is Reb Itchke's Yahrzeit. And I'm not sure what if this is something important to mention or not, or if anyone cares. But just on a personal note, I should say that the very first time that a very young Rabbi Sheis Taub ever appeared speaking on a video, this was before the internet. This was back in like 2000, maybe 2001. I guess there was an internet, but I don't think we had videos on internet. I'm pretty sure we didn't have videos on internet. But there was a video that was produced by Reb Itchke called A Deeper Reality. And he put me in that video. So that's how I got my start in showbiz. At any rate, Reb Itchke should have a lichtig in Gan Eden. And Be'ikar, Mensch, was hat er so viel gekocht sich in Mashiach. He was always speaking about the Geula and about Mashiach. So enough of Gan Eden. He should be back here with us in the physical world, back in his body and punching us again. I don't know if you guys remember that. He used to punch everyone. He used to punch me all the time. Yeah, so anyways, that I didn't even realize till today that it was his Yahrzeit, and I spoke about him last night. Okay, tonight's letter. It's a short letter. Let's jump in. Baruch Hashem, Zayin Tishrei, Tavshin Yud Tes, Brooklyn, Shalom Uvracha. So this is still the month of Tishrei. In fact, it's still the Aseres Yemei HaTshuva, the days of penitence. And the Rebbe is writing to a man, as we know, from Shalom Uvracha. I don't know who this man is. I know a couple of things about him, if you read the letter carefully. I know that he feels bad about something that he did, and he's sad. I know that, and you're going to know that in a minute when we start reading. I know that he's involved in some type of public activities. Maybe he's a rabbi, maybe he's a teacher, a communal leader, but if you'll read on in the letter, you'll find out he's somebody who's involved in activities that are for the greater good, for the community. So basically, probably he's a rabbi who's sad about something he did that was beneath his standards and values and morals. And it makes sense he would write to the Rebbe at this time of year. The Rebbe's answering during Aseres Yemei Tshuva. The letter itself, as the Rebbe indicates, was written at Erev Rosh Hashanah. So, yeah, you're talking about probably, most probably, if I use my Sherlock Holmes thinking here, it's a rabbi who's trying to do tshuva and he's feeling bad about something he did, and he's writing to the Rebbe Erev Rosh Hashanah because you don't want to head into the new year without taking care of that the old business. That seems what the context of the letter is. I'm not 100% sure, but just seems like that's what it is. Okay, so shall we? Ma'ashrim kabbalas michtavim erev Rosh Hashanah. I'm hereby acknowledging receipt of his letter that he wrote on erev Rosh Hashanah. I mentioned that a moment ago. Ubetach lemeiser lahadgish shekol hamachshavos shehem hefech hasimcha v'tuv levav bayim loy mahayetzer teif. Certainly it is superfluous to mention or to emphasize that all, that Rebbe makes a categorical statement, all thoughts that are the opposite of joy and gladness, see, the Rebbe doesn't even use the word atzvos. The Rebbe says the opposite of simcha, the opposite of joy and gladness, that these come from, and the Rebbe doesn't say they come from the Yetzer Hara, he says they come from not the Yetzer Tov. You have to know how to read it. So any thoughts that aren't joy are from not the Yetzer Tov. Okay? So obviously this person is writing to the Rebbe saying he's having thoughts that are the opposite of joy. And we're going to find out why he's having thoughts that are the opposite of joy. It has to do with some guilt that he has, but that'll become clear. Ukumavur ba'arucha bekama mekemes. As this is explained at length in many places, this idea that sadness does not come from the Yetzer Tov, even when we think we have a good religious reason for sadness, sadness is to be shunned. So the Rebbe says this is explained at length in many places. Umehem, among those places, those sources, gam besefer Tanya Kedisha, it is explained in the holy book of Tanya. V'chimetzuyon b'mifteach inyonim shebesefer, as is indicated or noted, cited with a C in the index of subjects in the back of the Tanya. Let me just pause here for a second, because I think this is an important point. There's an incredible tool called the Mafteach Hoinyonim. There are a bunch of tools in the back of the Tanya, but let's just talk about this particular tool that the Rebbe is speaking about here in this letter. Mafteach Hoinyonim, the index of subjects. Many people do not know that when the Tanya came out in 1954, when Kohos printed the Tanya in New York, 1954, the Rebbe wrote a foreword to that edition, explaining that it was significant in that it was the first printing of Tanya in the lower hemisphere. Those of you who are familiar with the significance of Chof Ches Sivan, 28th of Sivan, and the Rebbe's arrival to America in 1941 with the Rebbe Tzinchaya Mushka, and then again when the Rebbe arrived, and the Rebbe brought his mother, Rebbe Tzinchana, over from France, he arrived on the same date, again, remarkably, Chof Ches Sivan. So those who are familiar with that story and the Rebbe's explanation of the significance of that story understand the idea of the Koyach of Sivan, that Sivan is like Matan Torah, bringing that which is above to the below, and the below to the above, and the merging of the spiritual and the material. And Chof Ches Koyach is the power of that idea. So basically, the Rebbe gave a lot of significance to the relocation of Lubavitch and his personal relocation from the higher hemisphere. You know, people probably notice I keep this on my desk. There's a reason I keep this globe. I had one that lit up, and I gave it to Yossel Gutnick for his birthday. So, and it was, but I replaced it with one that doesn't light up. But the reason that I have this one is because it rotates both axes. Most globes, they only spin one way. But I have this one because you can rotate it both directions. And what I do is I make it correct. I put Eretz Yisrael on the top. We're used to seeing the North Pole on the top, which really is not correct. Anywhere that you go to Eretz Yisrael from is called Aliyah. you're going up when you're going to Eretz Yisrael. So Eretz Yisrael is actually, the Holy Land is actually on the top. So then everything around that area is called the higher hemisphere. So that includes all the places where most of the Jewish communities lived for a couple of thousand of years after even the destruction of the Second Temple, meaning whether your ancestors went to Lithuania or to Morocco or to Yemen or to Poland, it's all like on the top hemisphere over here. But then what happened is only in the past like 100 years is this mass migration to the lower hemisphere down here. You guys can't see it so well on camera, but here's the top. Here's the top. Eretz Yisrael, and then here's New York. It's getting toward the bottom. I don't know if you guys can even. Yeah, so it's going down. Okay, so at any rate, but there's a significance of going down to the bottom of the world. It's leverage. The Rebbe spoke about that. The idea of the Rebbe actually is quoting Torah Or from the Alter Rebbe, that when you want to lift a building, you could even lift a building if you get a lever to get up under it. And so too, you can lift, you can elevate all of Seder Shtalshlis. You can make all the worlds holier. How? By coming down into the physical world. And within the physical world itself, the lower part of the physical world. At any rate, so there was great significance given to this idea of publishing the Tanya in the lower hemisphere and in 1954. And in conjunction with that publication, so the Rebbe included some learning tools in the back of the Tanya, including a Mafteach Ha'anyanim, an index of subjects. And I don't think people realize that it was the Rebbe, it's the Rebbe's own scholarship. The Rebbe created this index. And the Rebbe was very into Mafteches, into index or indices in general, but maybe that's a class unto itself. But at any rate, it's very important to understand the tool that the index of subjects is. And I've personally used it not just to look up where something is. That's not the only thing. Yes, it helps you to look up where something is. But more so, it helps you to know like where the main sugya of something is. Like if I want to know, for instance, let's say Simcha, because that's what the Rebbe is talking about in this letter. Where does it speak about Simcha in Tanya? Well, if you use a computer to search it, it'll say the word Simcha in a lot of chapter. I mean, it'll say Simcha in the first chapter, right? Where it says Simcha B'tuv Levov, right? Yeah, so in the first chapter, it'll say the word Simcha. If you have like an artificial intelligence tell you where it says the word Simcha in Tanya, that doesn't really, you need to actually be guided where's the real place in Tanya where that subject is defined and explained properly. So, for instance, Mafteach Anyanim, so you look up Simcha, and so it doesn't have every single time it has the word Simcha. Far from it. It just has the main places where you're going to really learn what Simcha is. So, for instance, in Likutei Amorim, Perek Chavav, in chapter 26 of the first volume of Tanya, so over there it speaks about Simcha, Tachas Asher Loi Goymer, meaning, since you didn't serve Hashem with Simcha, right, as the Arizal explains. And also chapter 31, Simcha Sha'achar Merirus, the special type of joy that comes after and out of bitterness and frustration. And then also chapter 33, Yismach Yisro Ba'esov, which later on became one of the 12 psukim. And then also Igeres HaTshuva, chapter 11, which the Rebbe refers to as Tam L'Simcha, a reason for Simcha, and as well as Yigeres HaTshuva, chapter 12, Kanal, the same thing the Rebbe says, meaning, again, the reason for Simcha, and then Yigeres HaKodesh, Yud Aleph, which is also, the Rebbe says again, Kanal, the reason for Simcha. And each one of these chapters that are all called the reason for Simcha give different reasons. In the Egeres HaKodesh, it's speaking about thinking about how God is creating the world, something from nothing every single second. So how could you at all think that things aren't perfect at this second? But in Egeres HaTshuva, chapters 12 and 11 and 12, he says something a little bit different. And I'm thinking that perhaps that is specifically relevant to our letter. In chapter 11 of Egeres HaTshuva, the Rebbe explains that one can harbor joy and frustration simultaneously. It's not a contradiction, as is mentioned in chapter 34 of Likutei Amorim Chelek Aleph. But in Egeres HaTshuva, it gets into it in more detail. It speaks about the idea that Hashem is marba l'slayach. Hashem is abundantly forgiving. So what is the tam ha-simcha? What's the reason for simcha? Is that you know that Hashem is abundantly forgiving. And that even though we mess up and we mess up again, Hashem forgives us. And the Alter Rebbe explains over there, and lest you think that because we mess up again and again and again, that Hashem's going to get tired of us. No, Hashem is infinite. He has infinite patience. And lest you argue, maybe you're really smart and you're going to pull out all these Talmudic arguments to try to prove that you should be depressed. So the Alter Rebbe says, and unless you argue that, hold on, this is a person who says, Echtav Oshuv, call me Shaim, Echtav Oshuv, I'm going to sin and then do tshuva later. And then we know that it doesn't work. Although the Alter Rebbe explains even that, that maspikin means it's not going to be easy for it to work. At any rate, but you're not supposed to do that. Well, hold on. So if I'm going to sin and then I'm going to do tshuva, and then I know that I'm probably going to fall again because that's my track record. So why should I think that Hashem is going to forgive me? And so he explains over there that Echtav Oshuv only means when at the moment of the sin itself, you consciously rely on the loophole of tshuva. Then they close the loophole and it doesn't work for you. But if it's just an absent-minded thing where unfortunately, human weakness prevails and you end up stumbling again. So it's unfortunate, and we need to be better next time. We need to do better next time. But Hashem will still be infinitely forgiving. And that is a cause for simcha. That is a cause for joy. That's chapter 11 of Egeres HaTshuva. And then in chapter 12 of Egeres HaTshuva, the very next chapter, he gives another cause for joy that's related to tshuva. And he says, and by the way, if you ever have a problem in life, who among us doesn't have problems in life? Next time you have a problem in life, you should be happy because that's Hashem cleaning you off from any of the wrong things you've done in the past. And isn't it great to get all that stuff paid up now and get all the debt worked off now and not have to carry that with you? So next time you have a little bit of stress in life, you say, it's a kapara, it's cleaning me, and it's a cause for simcha. At any rate, so the Rebbe references the Mafteach of Tanya and tells this person, go check that out. I think it'll help with the issue at hand. The Rebbe continues. Let's go back into the text. Umedivrei HaRambam, the Rebbe gives him another reference to go check out. I love it. Tanya and Rambam. Basically, that's the life of a chassid, isn't it? Tanya and Rambam. And Chumash and Telem. Gittas and Rambam. That's our lives. That's and Igris. I mean, that'll keep you busy all day long. So the Rebbe gives him some Rambam. I should just mention it has nothing to do, at least not in any way that I can figure out an association quickly off the top of my head, but it seems to have nothing to do with this letter or tonight's class or the fact that it's Purim, but doesn't matter. I'm going to say it because it's a public service announcement. We are coming to a siyum of the daily Rambam on base year, L'chadchila Ribber, the birthday of the Rebbe Maharash, which is significant. The Rebbe always held that day dear. It's a siyum for those who learn three chapters a day and complete the Mishnah Torah every year, as well as those who learn one chapter a day and complete the Mishneh Torah once every 3 years. So it's a good time to get in on it. And since it's L'chadchila Ariber, you don't have to wait until the actual Haskalah. You could just start now, L'chadchila, and start learning wherever we are. Okay, so the Rebbe references Rambam, Saif Hilchas Lulav. So I actually went and I dug up my Zmanim, even though we are in Sefer, what are we, in Mishpatim, we're doing Schiros. So here's Zmanim and Hilchas Lulav. And at the end of Hilchas Lulav, the Rambam speaks about Simcha, Mitzvah Laharbas B'Simcha. So we're talking about the Simcha of Yom Tov. This is the end of the Hilchas Lulav, the last chapter, chapter 5, Perek Hey. And I'm looking at the Halacha Yud Dalet. In the next halacha, Tezvav, Hasimcha Shismach Adam Basias HaMitzvah, Ba'avas HaKel, Shetziva Bahen. Now he talks about, in general, the Simcha Shal Mitzvah, the Simcha that a person has just in being able to do what Hashem asked him to do. Aveda G'daylahi, it is a great Aveda, meaning not only does it enhance the Mitzvah, but it itself is worthy of being referred to as an Aveda. V'chola meinea atzme misimcha zu roi liyapara mimenu. And it's not good to hold yourself back from that simcha. Meaning, no matter what your excuses are. Okay, over here he talks about people who hold themselves back because they're self-conscious and they think it's beneath them. They don't want to look like they're having a good time, God forbid. But could also be applied to somebody who makes religious arguments that if you knew what I did and what I have to do tshuva for, you would realize that it's not appropriate at all for me to be besimcha. So the Rebbe is invoking these words of the Rambam to tell this person, you know what? Yeah, maybe you have to do tshuva. Maybe you have some stuff in your past that really needs fixing. But that's not an excuse. It's not a reason to do the opposite of simcha. Okay, but let's look how the Rebbe quotes the Rambam here from Hilchas Lulav. Muvan shafilu in yonei tshuva tzrichim liyeis dafke besimcha betuv leivav. It's understood from the Rambam that even tshuva is not an exception. You think tshuva is an exception? No, tshuva is not an exception. Everything, even tshuva, has to be done with joy. Like it says over there, that simcha is one of the main important points of serving Hashem. It's not just something that's done to enhance a mitzvah. It's a very important discussion here. Is simcha a catalyst to make a mitzvah stronger or more powerful or potent, but the actual significance begins and ends with the mitzvah itself? That's one way of looking at it. Or is simcha itself intrinsically worthy? So the Rebbe says from the Rambam, it seems that it's an Aveda Gedela. It itself is an Aveda. It's not just something you do to enhance the mitzvah. The Rebbe says, not just an Inyan Shel Hider. Ki im b'loshen Rambam Aveda Gedela. The Rambam calls Simcha itself a big way of serving God. V'arichas b'davar ha'pashat kezeh, achla meiser. It's totally superfluous to elaborate further on something so obvious. And I've mentioned in previous classes that when the Rebbe says something is so obvious, if it wasn't obvious to us until now, it should start being obvious to us from now on. And I know some people get like discouraged and they feel bad. They're like, oh, the Rebbe said it was obvious and I didn't even know about that thing. I feel so dumb. Don't feel dumb. Feel lucky that the Rebbe is cluing us in on which ideas are obvious, which ideas should start us off as our premise. In other words, there are certain things that do take harder work to figure them out and to come to a recognition that these ideas are true. But something what the Rebbe says, it's just so obvious. So you can install that in your heart as an axiom. You don't have to worry about it anymore. You can just make that a given. And life becomes so much more clear when we operate from that perspective. Okay. Musker pei hamcho ma'achas ha'kupe shel kveid kedushas meidah v'chom ya'ad mo nesi Yisrael. Enclosed is a check, like a money that you write, a check, from one of the charitable funds of my father-in-law, the leader of the Jewish people. Now, that's why I'm saying that this is probably a rabbi or communal leader, because the Rebbe is sending him money from one of the Friedrich Rebbe's funds. And then the Rebbe says, "V'laseses hakesef be'echad ma'asokov," that you should spend that money on one of your activities that you're involved in. The Rebbe also says it in Yiddish, "Untur nemungun," one of your undertakings. By the way, I heard that the Rebbe would not use the word under. See, it's interesting. In Yiddish, "Untur nemungun," one of your undertakings, which is Echad Ma'asokov. I heard that Nissen Mendel wrote undertaking. I think that's where it was written. And the Rebbe corrected it and said he didn't want to use the word in English. Why not? The Rebbe uses it in Yiddish because in English, the Rebbe was so careful. We mentioned earlier that Rebbe didn't want to say depression. The Rebbe said the opposite of simcha. The Rebbe didn't say yetzer hara. The Rebbe said the opposite of the yetzer tov, or not from the yetzer tov. Even double meanings that Rebbe avoided if it had a negative connotation. So an undertaker in English, it's like a funeral director. So the Rebbe didn't use that word. That's what I heard, at least. Umatoiv bishnayim mehem, and it would be even better if you would spend the money on two of your activities. So this is a busy guy. This is a guy who's involved in more than one positive activity that would be a worthy recipient of one of the Friedrich Rebbe's funds. I'm not purporting to understand the implication. I'm just wondering if the Rebbe isn't sort of reminding the guy about all of his responsibilities and letting him know, like, hey, not only are you doing one activity that is worthy of the Friedrich Rebbe's funds being directed toward, but you even have, I mean, it seems like he has more than two, because the Rebbe says one or two of them, meaning there's probably a lot of them. I don't know. I'm just thinking maybe the Rebbe is reminding the guy how much good stuff he's involved in. And that's the Rebbe's general approach, by the way. When people are feeling bad about what they've done, the Rebbe tries to direct them to focus their energy more into positive stuff. Okay. V'Hashem Yisborech Yekayim Es Maimer Azal. Hashem should fulfill the saying of our sages, Bava Basra Tes Vav Beis. Hanoitol Pruto Me'iov Misborech. Okay, this is an interesting concept here. The Gemara from Bava Basra, Shtukl Gadata over there, and it mentions the idea that somebody who would get a coin from Eov would be blessed. And, the Gemara is speaking about the wording of the verse in Eov, that the Sutton is speaking to Hashem and saying, look at Eov, he's got such a great life materially and spiritually, and that even Maise Yodov Beirachto, Maise Yodov Beirachto, that's the first chapter, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Yud. The work of his hands, or the works, plural, of his hands, you have blessed. What does it mean, the works of his hands you have blessed? So the Gemara there explains that it means that things that Eov's hands touched would carry blessing. So if somebody received a coin from Eov, they would have success because of the blessing that was transferred just from receiving a coin that Eov had touched. That's how powerful he was. That was Eov's touch, so to speak. So the Rebbe is sending a check to this person from the Friedrich Rebbe's funds and saying, being that it's a check from the Friedrich Rebbe's funds, meaning it's the Friedrich Rebbe's money, so this should have the effect that our sages say about somebody who gets a coin from Eov. Shenamar boy, and it says about him, about Eov, Ish Tom the Yasher Geimer, it says that he was a sincere man, a straightforward man. It goes on, Yirei Elakim, he was God-fearing, Vesor Meira, and he avoided evil. Shekol Inyonim Eloheim Bechveit Kedushas Meira Vechomi Admor Vekal Lohavin. All of those descriptions that the Torah says about Eov can obviously be applied to the Friedrich Rebbe. So the power that receiving a coin from Eov has, as our sages describe, would ostensibly, it would stand to reason that that same power would be contained in receiving something from the Friedrich Rebbe. And of course, we all know about how the Rebbe spent so much of his time and energy giving physical objects to so many, whether it be the dollars, which is sort of iconic that the Rebbe is standing and giving dollars to people, which was also for the purpose of Shliach Mitzvah, like the Rebbe said and made very clear. But obviously it had that meaning as well of receiving something from the hands of the tzaddik that itself would have an effect. And also the Rebbe gave out Keshel Bracha and Tanyas and Kuntresim. So there were many things that the Rebbe gave out, and it has this effect of carrying with it these blessings, as indicated by the Gemara in Bava Basra. Okay. Hapan shalai yikare be'es ratzin alatzion ha-kodesh shel kved kedushas meir v'chom yadmur zecher tzadik v'kodesh levrocha l'chayilim haba nishmasi begins amirem in d'zuchusa yagin aleinu. Your pan, your pidyon nefesh, which is a standard formula for writing a chassid, writing a rebbe, it's specifically a letter that a It's more than a letter, but it's a deep connection that a chassid formulates on paper to a rebbe. It has specific significance, so it's informally referred to as a pan or pidyon nefesh, redemption of the soul. So the rebbe says the pan that you wrote, apparently there was a letter and a pan. Usually that's how it was done. There would be two separate documents. So the Rebbe says, your pan, I'm going to read at the aisle of the Friedrich Rebbe at an auspicious time. V'Hashem Yisborach Yazer, Hashem should help Shebekarav Mamish, that really, really soon, literally soon, Yevaser Toiv B'chol Anal, you should have good news to report in all of the above. In other words, you know, let's put this negativity behind us and move on, and let's do it with joy. Betev hanirva nigla, it should be good in an obvious, apparent way, meaning you shouldn't have to philosophize to come up with an interpretation where you see good. It should just be obviously good. Vo'iker, and the main thing, besimcha v'tuv levav, it should be with joy and gladness of heart. Bebirkas chsima, I said this last night, this is how the Rebbe would bench people during and this is the way that we should say it. Be a birkas with a blessing for chsima ugmar chsima toiva, to be sealed and a complete sealing for good. And that is our letter for tonight. Afreilich in Purim. We will see you tomorrow night for our special Sudas Purim edition of 30 Letters and 30 Days.